Hey everyone, just a quick note here. This episode was recorded on Monday, before the recent reports of soldiers opening fire on Nigerian anti-police brutality protesters in Lagos.
Yo everybody, we back, brand new tech-ish in the building. It's Michael Behane with...
Adesi.
Oh, Ryan, drop a bomb right now. Go on. There we go. Yeah, so this is going to be a very Nigerian-centric episode. So I got two stories that I want to talk
nation,
about.
Greatest nation. Go on, sorry, continue.
Is that the national anthem? Or
might as well be.
It might as well be. That's the new one. All right, cool. So obviously more on a somber note. So the first story is something that, listen, even if you're not Nigerian, you saw it bubbling up on the timeline, this whole situation with #NSARS. So obviously what's really been going down, I don't know the full extent, but from my readings and my research, obviously I want to be informed as much as possible. There's obviously a specific anti-robbery section of the police in Nigeria that's been accused of police brutality. There's been a lot of reports, documented cases of torture, ill treatment, executions between, you know, in recent times. So now this whole movement has started essentially to kind of get that disbanded, basically. And it's gone viral online. People got involved. Jack Dorsey, Kanye West. I've seen everybody from, you know, Black Lives Matter activists to celebrities getting involved. Like, I think the police have agreed to disband it, but I think people are now saying, we want more. We want to kind of, you know, have the end police brutality, full stop. And
exactly.
There's protests in London, protests globally. So the power of social media, obviously, but Abba, like, obviously you don't live in Nigeria, but you've been there before. Just quickly, see if you, do you have any personal anecdotes? Like, do you know anything about, like, not maybe not this segment of the police, but the police in general? Like, what's the relationship between the population and, you know, the police force out there?
I think we all know that police brutality exists everywhere, right? In every society, we know that police are kind of pushing the boundaries of their authority and their limits. But what I think is really scary about SARS, at least from the stories I've heard in my network, is people getting kidnapped by SARS. Do you know what I mean? Like, people just like going beyond their actual scope of responsibility to act on just like more like a gang. You know what I mean? Like, people are getting kidnapped, forcing bribes, all this kind of stuff. I mean, police are like taking justice into their own hands and even going as far as murdering suspected criminals and stuff like that. So there's a real just feeling of the complete denial of human rights. You know what I mean? Like, there's a justice system that exists, yet people have been empowered to take justice into their own hands. And it's like a glorified mob justice culture that's been created. And I think it's been rebranded. But is it really going to change? Do you see what I mean? Like, it's not called SARS anymore. Now there's a new unit instead in their place. But what really is at the core of this issue is just unchecked police power. It's not the name. Do you see what I mean? It's the process.
Right.
It's the strategy. And also it's the accountability. Where is that ombudsman, that third party? Do you see what I mean? Like, if someone steps beyond their mark, who's going to call them into account? Who's going to make them sit in front of a jury and debate their actions? Now, don't get me wrong, still waiting for justice for Breonna Taylor, right? Nigeria is not the only country dealing with these issues, but I think people are just fed up. They want a process, they want a system, and they want an end to the madness.
Who polices the police, basically.
Exactly.
And you know what, like, I think, you know, on my timeline, just seeing a lot of like Nigerian tech founders that are relatively quite prominent. They're like, listen, I've been involved. So I got a tweet here from Yele Bodomosi. I think that's how I say his name.
Bodomosi, yeah.
Yeah, he's a crypto founder. I think even YC backed. And he was like, listen, fam, I got kidnapped. I was 2 minutes from my home. And like, you know, I'll put the tweet in the show notes, but essentially they stopped me and you know, and there was nothing I could do about it. So rich, poor, privileged, successful, whatever, like, it's affecting everybody. So it's a madness.
And you know, I'm just going to use this opportunity to talk about the importance of Nigeria to Black culture, because Nigeria is like the largest Black nation, right? And by 2050, the Nigerian population will exceed the US. And I think, you know, I could bang on about Nigeria for ages, but it's really important for this significant country, not only in the African continent, but also in terms of Black culture, to really be at the forefront of progress and change. Like, we don't want to disenfranchise and disengage the millions of people in the diaspora, as well as the millions of people on the ground doing the work of building a future that puts Black culture in the forefront and at the core. You see what I mean? So I feel like we're really going to have this lost opportunity in history if we don't wake up to this and play a role in this and participate in this, because the world is changing. The powers of the world are shifting incredibly quickly. You see what I mean? Like, we've had the fall from grace of the US, a superpower. Who will be the next superpower? And I think if anyone from Africa wants to take it seriously, then we really have to observe what's happening in Nigeria and really make sure that the government responds to what the people want. want, and that it doesn't take that risk of just becoming, you know, another down that road of fascism or whatever scary stuff.
Yeah, failed state. Yeah, it's interesting because I think this showed, obviously, listen, the people on the ground have been doing amazing work, but it definitely does help to have a really powerful diaspora to kind of pump up a message. Because I think, you know, if you look at what's happening in the Congo, for example, there's a madness happening there. And I know a bit about it, but I don't know a lot about it. But I think the fact that Nigeria, and again, I'm not taking away what's been done on the ground, but I think the fact that Nigeria has such a large diaspora of people who are relatively quite successful, who are influential, the music scene is now crossing boundaries, like that helps. And obviously, in tandem with social media, it's a game changer.
Yeah, thanks for our listener, Nosa, for bringing our attention to this. And we'd love to hear from you. Hashtag Tekesh, let us know how you weigh in on this debate, especially if you're listening from the trenches in Nigeria.
So sticking with Nigeria, in better news, Paystack, which is essentially a payments platform based in Nigeria, YC-backed, have exited 200... Say 200 million in Nigerian accent. I don't want to do it. You do it.
200 million.
Yeah, there we go. There we go. Shout out to them. That's unbelievable. That's one hell of an exit for, you know, a continent that's often been overlooked, for countries that have been overlooked, for a tech scene that's been overlooked. Now, I think the world's attention is now firmly on the tech sector in Africa now. It's got to be a $200 million exit. And I think they only raised like 11 million.
Damn. So,
massively successful. And Stripe, that's a
obviously Nigerian talent.
You know what? So what are the implications? Like, what's the give me the good news, give me the bad news. Is there any bad news, or what, like, what is the
you know, Marilyn Magnuson, one of our listeners, was talking about this. It's one of those double-edged swords where it's like, of course, this exit is incredible, puts us on the map, delivers that return to investors, validates all the hard work that's been put into this journey, but it's an acquisition by a US company. And what has the continent lost by not keeping that wealth, keeping that energy, that journey, that passion, that talent in the continent? See what I mean?
Right. So basically the concern is,
because you're very, you know, Pan-Africa, the future is the continent, Afro-future king. What are you thinking?
You know what? I'm not I don't have that perspective, primarily because the reality is Paystack went the VC route. And once you've gone the VC route, there's got to be some kind of liquidity event, whether that's an exit, whether that's going public. I don't necessarily know if there is a mature IPO market in Nigeria. I'm not an expert. But from my understanding, I don't think there is. What did we expect was going to happen? US capital went into this company via YC. Stripe, I think, even invested in a Series A round. So this is what the outcome is. And I think, to be honest, yes, ideally, would I love it to be, yo, man, just fully black empowerment, a black company bought it, whatever, of course. But the reality is, once people see there's exits in this market, once people see there's money to be made, the capital pours in. And that means the next generation of young, hungry African founders isn't necessarily have to work as hard to kind of raise that money. So we have more companies forming. And then obviously these individuals who started this company, now they're rich, they can do angel investing on the continent. They can start new companies. They can
do their own VC fund.
But the possibility is now there where it once wasn't, right? And if you recall, we talked about how it's easier for white founders in many African countries to raise money. There was crazy stat. Yeah, remember that one? We got to realize that VCs are just basic people who just do pattern matching a lot of times. And if they just think white founder in Africa equals better opportunity, seeing two black founders, one of them's got dreads. Do you see what I'm saying? Yeah. Seeing two black founders make that kind of money, unfortunately, on a superficial level, will most likely mean that the whole pattern matching model has to be thrown out the window now. Now you got to reassess and be like, yeah, like it could come from anyone out here. So while I do understand the concern, I'm also just like, there's many good things to come from this, I think.
What's the play for Stripe? Is this their continued mission to be the payments processor, maintain that unicorn, maybe try unicorn or whatever status, get access to more global domination?
I think, yeah, definitely. The play for Stripe is this is their inroad to the African continent. Obviously, the African continent, you know, there's a whole bunch of countries, you know, and let's keep it real, actually, in terms of payments in Nigeria, it's difficult. A lot of payment platforms don't even take Nigerian payments, right? And we all know the history behind that, right? I don't know. Yeah, hey, I'm not going to go too deep into the whole 419 thing, but you know what I'm saying, isn't it? Yeah. Unfortunately, Nigeria has had this kind of association. So I think if there's a company that's managed to make it work on the ground and has managed to be seamless, you know what I'm saying? That's a massive opportunity. Africa is growing, you know, the 10 fastest growing countries are all in Africa. It's open, not, I don't want to say it's virgin territory, but it's massive growth potential, right? I mean, there's Jack Dorsey was like, yo, I'm going Africa a while ago, wasn't he saying that? And he weren't doing that because he wanted to go on holiday. He does that because he runs Square, which is also a payment platform, and they realize that Africa is the future of payments. People don't have bank accounts necessarily. They're a mobile first generation. Young people, majority of people in Africa are young, are under 30, I think, some crazy stat.
Yeah.
So it's a goldmine potentially, whoever gets there first. So this is actually quite a savvy acquisition for me. I think he might even end up proving to be quite cheap in the long run. And yeah, I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think the logic is sound. It makes a ton of sense. It's not the beginning of their relationship. They participated in previous rounds. I think they led their Series A. And you're right, you know, why build it when you can just acquire it? And they've got that geographical specific expertise. They've got the brand. They've got the trust. If I could afford them, I probably would have done the same thing. Why compete? So I think it makes a lot of sense. And hopefully, I mean, all things considered, I do feel like Stripe, I just don't really like see like Patrick and John in the kind of like old guard of like Silicon Valley ways. I mean, I could completely be wrong with this, but while they are like, you know, YC company, blah, 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 they are, you know, they're Irish, they're young, they're a bit different. I would like to think that they have, as part of their vision, a way to not completely like Americanize this experience the way you see a lot of big tech firms from the West Coast of America kind of like acquire companies and then absorb them and completely lose that local touch. I'd like to think that they're going to really find a way to keep the company doing what it does well and like relatively
I think they said they will keep it independent. So let's see. You know, one quick thing on Stripe actually. So like, I use Stripe for my platform, right? And it's Same a great here. Product.
Love it.
Yeah, so
love
shout
it.
Out to them.
Love it.
But one thing that irks me about Silicon Valley and tech in the last like 10 years or even 20 years is that like nobody goes public, and it annoys me because I'm somebody who wants to flipping own like some great stocks that are like, you know, I'm keeping it pure self-interest. I wish I could have invested in Stripe. I wish I could have invested in, you know, Airbnb's coming out public,
yeah,
I think like theoretically next year, but yeah, it takes so long that a lot of the value is gone. Like by the time they go public, they're worth like, you know, so much money that it's like, how much more growth do you really have, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And don't get twisted, it's not just me being selfish. It's also the fact that like, if you're not in the kind of Silicon Valley ecosystem, the whole bubble of like, you can't grab any of that growth. That you're boxed out from that kind of economic opportunity. By the time Uber went public, it was like, how many people had made billions of dollars and just like left the picture, right? So yeah, man, Stripe, hurry up, go public. Come on.
No, like, I don't know. Well, the thing is, they're not. They're really not, right? And this is the thing, like the point you're making is a very important point. And people that are interested about accountability in tech really need to start thinking about this long and hard and listening and campaigning, right? Because the advantage to society of companies going public is not just the fact that, you know, from a commercial perspective, you can now invest in some of the companies that you admire and support. It's also about the accountability through the eyes of the legal frameworks that exist,
Absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, yep.
Public companies are accountable to things that private companies are just not. And this is what I think is quite a sinister driver of this unwillingness to go public. The reality is there's too much money. There's too much money in the world now. Think of like those OG 80s, 90s darling stories, you know, where a company is just like on its last legs and it's like, there's literally no more institutional funding we can access. Mm-hmm. We have to go public. The banks would push you to go public. They would push you to go public, and then you would do it. Stripe literally raised $600 million in funding in April of this year, right?
I didn't even know that. That's mad.
It was in the article that I read about the acquisition of Paystack. And then you have to start to wonder, where is the incentive to go public now, right? Because before it was to access huge sums of capital and continue that product development, expansion, all the things you need. But now people in the private markets are willing to give that to you, whether that's private equity, whether that's VC funds, late stage VC funds, institutional investors, all sorts
of things.
The Saudis. This China, SoftBank, who knows, right?
Yeah.
And this is what's absolutely terrifying and absolutely scary. Tech companies are basically saying, we want to keep running this ship without any outside intervention, without any government control. There's this tension between how will governments keep these huge companies with all this data accountable to their social responsibility, and tech companies going, I see where public opinion is going. It's a bit risky. Yep. There's an election coming up. There's no guarantees. People on the boards are telling leadership, just keep it private. Keep it private. And guess what? While the VCs still get their money, all they need is a follow-on round. You're right, right? A liquidity event is great. Exit or acquisition. But $600 million funding round ain't so bad either.
Absolutely. Yeah. You get all the liquidity in cash, and you can even sell, like, as a founder, you can sell secondary shares, or you can get, you know, rich without having to actually go public or sell your company. So I understand why the founders love it, but I think society wise, it's a shag. Like, it's not good for us, because I think
it's so bad. Yeah,
look at WeWork. When WeWork went public and they did their S1 filing, that's when everybody realized, oh my God, this company is a house of cards, right?
Exactly.
And that's a good thing for society. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, or if Stripe, hopefully that wouldn't happen to Stripe, but they would do their S1 filing, we'd be like, wow, this is a great company. Now thousands of people can just buy a little $100 stock or $50 stock and get their money working. But yeah, this is a very macro issue. I don't know what the solution is.
I do think as an industry, we're going to have to start thinking long term about what happens if IPOs are dead. You know, like, what happens if this is no longer a desirable route? Because we need to push companies of this scale, of this valuation, into a space where we have more visibility over them and where there's more transparency about how they're operating.
Yeah.
This episode is sponsored by Hotjar. They help companies understand how their users are really experiencing their site without drowning in the numbers. They're hiring for a senior site reliability engineer based in EMEA. You need at least 3 years of professional experience with systems administration, cloud infrastructure, DevOps. The salary ranges from €75,000 to €100,000. The link to apply is in the show notes.
Yeah, so it turns out, actually, so I think his name's Adam Newman. Is that the founder of WeWork? Adam Newman, I'm saying it right, yeah? So he's basically come back out and, like, invested in some, like, real estate startup. Love. And everyone is just like, I wish I could fail like an average white man. This guy, his company went into WeWork is still around, but it was pretty much an L. Like, they messed up. They were going to go public. They run out of cash, and now they're basically on their last legs. He has still come out a billionaire, and he is shameless enough to come out and be like, I'm going to invest my winnings. Obviously, what else is he going to do with his money? He personally succeeded, but he basically scammed. He finessed the whole situation. Yeah, he finessed the whole situation. Like, I'm not gonna lie, I don't even have the hotspot to try that. If I finesse the situation, I'm gonna go to my little island and hide in.
Yeah,
bro, I got too much shame. Yeah, for real. I'll be there with Bernie Madoff. But what's your thoughts on that? How do we feel like that? How do I feel like that?
It's
tell
not possible.
Me, Abba.
It's not possible. Look at you. Look at me. We ain't gonna be failing like some cisgender straight white guy. Come on. Like, unless I undergo some serious reconstructive surgery, completely build up a backstory and represent myself on the stages of the world so that I'm not facing structural oppression and bias the way that I am. It's never gonna happen, man. Never. Not in this lifetime. Not in this generation. No way.
Quick request to Adam Newman, if you're listening, if you want to spend your money guilt-free, invest in Hustle Crew and Pocket, $100 million will be enough, right? And that's a guilt-free way of, you know, using your liquidity. Yeah. Cool. Here's a subject that's very lighthearted, that will have no controversy, that nobody will be offended by what we'll talk about. Politics. So, Abadesi, US politics specifically, right? I think I'm going to offend a lot of people here, but I want to hear from your perspective.
That's set up. I'm going to offend a lot of people here. This is the acceptance. the acceptance.
Well, the reality is... I'm an outsider. I'm not from the US, right? So I'm not a US citizen. I have no rights to vote on any of this stuff. So I want to speak here from you, right? So have you voted yet? Are you going to vote? What's going on? Are you doing a mail-in thing?
I'm
What's
doing
happening?
An email ballot. I actually chased it today because I ain't received it and I'm worried. I reached my state of residence and asked for it. But yes, I will, of course, be voting, as I have always done since I was old enough to. You know, I just love Trump so much. I can't even joke about that. That's so messed up. No, y'all know who has my vote. But okay, I'm just going to speak from the heart right now. I'm honestly just going to speak from the heart right now. And I don't know if this is right or this is wrong, but I just feel like, you know, as a person, as a Black woman, Asian woman, all the things that I am, this year has been hard, just like it is for everyone. But, you know, we've had Black Lives Matter. I got laid off, got another job. My business, Hustle Crew, ups and downs, like
roller coaster.
You know, just that real sense of like, is it worth it? Is the world worth saving? Do you see what I mean? And I think what's happening right now as we get closer to election day is I'm remembering 2016 and I'm remembering how big the gap between my expectations and reality was And I'm remembering how unhappy, deeply, deeply unhappy that made me, not just with the Brexit announcement, the referendum going to leave, but also with Trump coming into power in the US election. And I think my new coping mechanism, driven by Stoic philosophy, is that I am expecting the worst in the US election because I don't want to put myself in a situation again where, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not voting for him. Obviously, I'm voting Democrat, right? I would love Kamala Harris to be the vice president. Joe Biden, I'll take you.
Yeah.
I'll take you over him. But what I'm saying is, like, even though I'm taking those actions and I'm doing everything I can, you know, at Brandwatch, we're telling people to go out and vote. I'm going to remind all the Texas listeners, please go out and vote. Please go out and vote. Or if you already have, well done. But I'm not going to pretend that I'm expecting my vote to manifest into reality.
Yeah, of course. I think that's a very valid way of coping because 2016, Trump in the UK, Brexit. Both of them, we were told that was never going to happen. Both of them, we were told it's laughable.
Right?
I vividly remember people on TV laughing at the idea that this guy would be president, right?
Exactly.
So I think you're right. I think expect the status quo and just like if it happens, you know what I'm saying? Like, be prepared, right? But obviously at the same time, it's such a shame because there are so many vulnerable people out here who really need this guy out of here. Do you know what I'm saying? The planet needs this guy out of here. Like, you know, the climate change, this guy is a climate change denier and a fascist and a racist, basically. So yeah, it's difficult. The thing I wanted to ask you though is how closely have you followed it for your own? Like, I know you said like in previous episodes that, listen, I'm just going to go there and vote. I'm not going to stay, you know,
I'm not going to
follow the horse race.
My news diet, I will say, is the only diet I've ever stuck to. it's been working. It's been helping me out. Yeah. You tell me, what have you found out? What have you seen recently?
So what's interesting to me is this kind of thing now where a couple black celebrities, man, they're trying to act like they're going to lead the revolution. And it's a very, whether they are or not, you know, is a different thing. But I think it is a change from historically where black celebrities and entertainers would fund people on the ground. So Martin Luther King got a lot of money from celebrities and entertainers, right? But now it's kind of flipped where these entertainers are so rich now. Diddy, he's worth a billion. And Ice Cube is probably worth hundreds of millions. Now they're like, F it, I'm the figurehead now and I'm going to be in charge or I'm going to lead the movement, right? So that's interesting. Ice Cube obviously came out. He created this thing called Contract with Black America. He sat down with a few scholars, I believe, and a few academics. They came up with this kind of 10-point plan about what needs to be done for Black America, essentially. The controversy came is because the Biden campaign said, this is great, we'll talk to you after the election. The Trump campaign, I think quite tactically, said, let's talk to you now. I don't think he spoke to Trump per se, but he had a meeting, I think, with some kind of associate, right?
No.
And then they've used that to basically say, Ice Cube's with us, right? Now, Ice Cube's come back out and said, listen, where I think he does have a point is that the future of Black America is a bipartisan issue, just like climate change. Like I said to you, one in a thousand African-Americans has died during the lockdown. And obviously, the criminal justice system, wealth gap, blah, 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 blah. Whoever is in power has got to deal with that and help, right? But he's been used. That's the thing. He's been used as, you know, he's been naive in my opinion, and he's been used to make it appear as if Trump's down for black people, which he obviously ain't. And whatever he's doing, it's a lie. He's got something. Trump released this platinum plan, which is meant to guarantee $500 million or billion. I can't remember, million or billion. That's a big disparity. But essentially, I think most likely it's 500 million. But he's promised a certain amount of capital to go into black communities. Obviously, the details are fuzzy and not necessarily concrete. But what is it now? And then Diddy's come out now with his kind of black party. He's created his own political party essentially to push the black agenda. He hasn't done anything with Trump. He's said, I'm voting Biden, and Biden, I think, might have even endorsed his party, whatever.
Bad boy for life, Biden.
Bad boy for life, yeah. But the thing is, like, what is it with celebrities now? Like, why don't they just want to provide the capital or fallback? Now, why is it that these two individuals now have decided to be like, yo, I'm the gatekeeper. I'm not the gatekeeper. I'm
power,
what's going on? Talk to me.
Power.
You think
power,
so?
Ego. Yo, let me spit a freestyle. No, seriously, though. I think it is a combination of things. I think there's a serious level of impatience around change. I think there's an incredible level of like frustration and agitation about the way the last 4 years have played out. I think there's a real, you know, they're getting to that age now where they're just like, I'm not going to be around forever and I want to see things change in my lifetime. I think there's, it's a very American attitude as well, isn't it? It's just a bit like, It's just very can do, just get up and go. I don't need qualifications. I'm gonna just do it. I'll make it happen. Yeah. And I think we've lost respect for like the specifics of politics. Do you know what I mean? Like we've become quite disillusioned and we don't really see the value of any experience or skills. And that's just not the US. You know, I'm thinking of this country here as well. And so a combination of
Trump's the linchpin of that, right? He's not qualified to be president and yet he is.
Yeah.
Is that part of the trend?
Yeah. It's not the first time as well, right? Like there's been celebrities being leaders for a really, really long time. But I think we're going to see, I hope, more people from the Black community stand up and step out because, I mean, what's the alternative? I mean, you know, the president himself is basically declaring a civil war if things don't go his way. And it's just like, wow, we need to really fix stuff because it's fundamentally broken in so many ways. I wouldn't be surprised if you see more people being like, nah, let me try. Let me give it a go. Let me get involved.
Yeah. I think you're right. We're just waiting for Jay-Z's party now. That's what we're waiting for, the Jigga party. It's difficult though. I understand the impatience. And I also understand, and this is the part where I think it's quite controversial. I also understand why people are not necessarily the biggest believers in the Democratic Party, because to be honest, a lot of the fuckery that's happened to Black people in America has been bipartisan. Whether you're talking about, you know, the amount of people in jail, the crime bill in 94, yeah. that was a Bill Clinton thing, right? And by the way, let me just get this out here. Everybody, please vote for Biden Harris. I'm not saying anything about that. I'm saying please vote for those two because that's absolutely what we need for the world and for your country, right? But I understand the frustration is what I'm saying. But I do think Cube was used. I think he got played. I think he's been made to use. He's been, you know,
yeah.
His genuine efforts have been turned into a political football, and now it's being made to look and be presented as if, oh, Ice Cube's down for Trump, therefore we can siphon off a percentage of the Black male vote or the Black vote, therefore we can somehow stay in power, and that's how it's going to be.
This episode is sponsored by The Hustle. The Hustle is one of the country's fastest growing business media companies. They are hiring for an experienced research analyst who can help them uncover the next big business idea for their premium trends publication. The link is in the show notes.
So somebody released a memo they sent to a board member of their company. So a founder, the company's called Circle Up, had a board member that they weren't happy about. They've since sold the company, I believe. So this person wrote this memo saying, listen, you're on our board and pretty much we thought you sucked. You're terrible. You're trash. They put it public without releasing who the individual in question is, but it's a tirade. I'm going to put the link to it in the show notes because it's absolutely, I found it hilarious, right? Because I was just like, you know, just sipping that tea and watching from the outside, right? But what was your thoughts when you saw that? Because like, is that appropriate to put somebody on blast like that, even if you don't publicize who it is? Or is it just like, what's the thinking behind all of this?
To be honest with you, I had time for this. This got shared in one of my like Black founder WhatsApp groups. Oh yeah, Andy Davis 10x10. And I was just like, oh, let me peep this. And I like opened the doc. It was like over the weekend when I was at this course and there were like 100 people viewing it. Because you know when you're on Google Docs, you can see how many people are looking at it. And I was just like, damn, like he went in on this guy. But the thing that I liked about it, honestly, was that it's behavior that I myself have seen, but I didn't see anyone challenge. And I kind of wish that like he actually got this guy on the phone or like on a Zoom call or like any video call and just kind of like talk to him about it. Because this guy is clearly an asshole, right? But the thing is, he's not a special or unique kind of asshole. He's just like a very arrogant guy. He's just like a typical arrogant. He is the center of his universe. His time is more valuable than any others. Like BS talking, but thinks he's really smart guy. VC, techie, whatever guy. And I just think we've all been there. You know what I mean? Like where you're in a conversation, someone's mansplaining your business model to you or something like that. I just kind of feel like I saw so many people I know when I was reading these descriptions. And that's maybe why it was comical to me, because I was just like, oh, wow, okay, so this really is a stereotype, a cliche. But I liked that it was being aired, because I think we do need to call out this behavior. To be honest, what I didn't like about it is that I feel like people have been canceled for far less than this in way more public forums. Do you see what I mean? Like Taylor Lorenz got doxxed for calling out anti-Semitism and other types of oppression in a chat app. This VC, because he's a VC and because people with money have power and probably he's a man and white and all these other things, he has the privilege of having his name blanked out. See what I'm saying? Yes. That's kind of fucked up. So that's the one thing I didn't like about it. I was just like, if you're doing this,
so you wanted to know who it was. You want him on blast, like, with their full name and everything.
Hell yes. Are you kidding me? Women. No, this is such an important point.
Yeah, like, yeah. Go on.
From underrepresented backgrounds, people from far less privileged backgrounds have been canceled, aired, abused for behavior far less traumatizing than this. But the difference is this person is rich and he doesn't want to, like, in a way, it's a bit cowardly because it's like, I'm going to take the upper road here or whatever. I'm going to, like, share this example so that other founders who want to feel morally righteous like me after the fact, after the exit, yeah, when I've got the guts to do it because I've got nothing to lose anymore, can follow in my footsteps. But it's just like, but to what end? Like, you didn't actually call the guy out. And is that going to stop people that act like that guy acting any differently? I don't think so. I think a lot of people are going to read the letter and go, well, what's wrong with that? Oh, well, what's wrong with that? Oh, well, what's wrong with that? I think a lot of people are going to read this letter and be like, man, this guy's a P word. Do you see what I mean? Like,
yeah, maybe you're right. I think it might have some impact, though. I think, like,
okay, maybe.
I think it might have an impact in the sense that, yo, this type of stuff isn't, you can't do this on a board. You can't be this dumb, basically, and this rude and this inconsiderate and silly. But you're right. Would it have had more impact if the person's name was on there? Hell yeah, of course it would. And I didn't necessarily think about whether it should have or shouldn't have. I think you're right. Probably would have had more of a bite if it did. But are you on any boards? Like, so do you, when you look at this stuff, because I'm not on any boards right now.
It's not me, Michael. I'm definitely not the subject of this letter. Okay, I'll go on a different tactic.
I was trying to investigate, right? But what I'll say is that the one key line that stood out to me, I never read the whole thing. I read bits of it. But the one thing, key line that stuck out to me was this bit. I regret that we only spoke 2 to 3 times on the phone before I took the deal. And that to me was the key part. Essentially, he didn't know this person. Wow. This person invested via his VC company, his VC firm, into this person's startup, but they didn't even know each other. He had never met him in real life. They just spoke 2-3 times on the phone. And it's like, I always tell people 2 things. One, if you got a co-founder, make sure you know them quite well, because that's basically a marriage. And two, to a lesser extent, so is this. Just because someone's throwing a check in your face, and I get it. Listen, from our kind of background and our kind of people, We're starving for capital in terms of getting VC funding. So there's a chance we actually might be more susceptible to this than the generic white founder, because they might have more choice in terms of who they get capital from. But the reality is, when you take someone's capital, you are in kind of a marriage, and know them, check them out, fill them out, get references. What are they like? Don't just be like, oh my God, the money. I know it's difficult, but do as much as you can, because you might end up with a complete fool on your board who's talking crap.
Can I ask something?
Yeah, go on.
You have 1 week of runway left.
Yeah.
And you've only spoken to someone 2 times, mm-hmm, but they're willing to write you a check. Do you take it or do you run out of money?
I take it, because at that stage you have employees probably, and you've got people's salary that you're paying, and you've got people's mortgages that you're helping pay in. So you've got to take it. If it's between that and death of the company, then you got to do it. Unless I thought the company didn't deserve to exist anymore.
But that's the thing, isn't it?
You know, we didn't get product market fit, and I'm just kind of, you know,
people do their due diligence until they don't have time to do diligence, because it's due diligence or death. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, you're right. That's a very fair point. I don't know what the specific situation this person was in. I don't know if the company was about to go bust, but they definitely were trying to close a deal in a hurry. And yeah, you're right. It can happen to anybody, but it's just a shame. Whether this has any impact on the ecosystem, I don't know.
I want to know who it is. That's all I'm waiting for. I will get my popcorn out once again when they're out.
This is why you need to be giving techish people some board seats. I will sit on your board for however much money you want to give me and tell you what's up. All right? I'll give you that real talk. You know what I'm saying? Abba will do the same.
Let me have a look here. People aren't ready to have us on their boards. That's the real truth. We don't have enough black VCs or female VCs or brown VCs, disabled VCs, queer VCs, all the usual groups that are underrepresented in our corporate world. And I recently did a course to skill up, because even though I've scouted for venture funds and I worked at AngelList and all this kind of stuff, I still kind of thought, you know, what could techish.vc look like? You see what I'm saying? Like, what would a techish fund look like? Or what would a hustle crew fund look like? So I was really, really happy to get a spot on Andy Iam's Angel Investing School course, which is an online course that ran over the last few weeks. Just getting to learn all sorts of things about, well, everything you need to know about angel investing. And it was amazing, because at the beginning, he was just like, by the end of this course, you'll either want to leverage the knowledge you've used or never angel invest ever, because you're going to realize how much of a lottery it is, which I thought was really cool. But yeah, I do think it's really important for people from our communities to gain this knowledge. I think a lot of us are like a bit afraid to know about like, oh, investing in companies, what does that involve? Yeah. What are the risks? There's so many tax breaks and tax benefits that could benefit you from the perspective of your overall portfolio, not just managing risk of that specific investment. But yeah, like, I would just encourage folks, if you are interested in learning more about angel investing, because, you know, many people that do end up partners at funds, start in this route, just kind of developing their own thesis on an individual level, building a relationship with founders over the long term, starting to really build out a portfolio and observe the dynamics and hopefully see some exits. It could be really, really valuable for you to do this. It's super affordable as well, only a few hundred pounds. So definitely check it out. Andy Iams Angel Investing School.
Shout out to Andy, man.
And he was on the honors list. You done know.
Oh yeah, whoop, whoop, whoop. MBE yeah. In the buildings. Shout out to that.
All right, everybody. That brings us to the end. Ah, bittersweet of another episode of Techish. As usual, we want to hear from you. So whether you are chiming in on Paystack, US elections, the prominence of hip-hop influencers in the US political scene, any of the other things Michael's brought up, the best way to get rich without taking risks, please use hashtag Techish on Twitter. Also want to say thanks to everyone leaving reviews. Barry in South Africa, we see you. Anyone else out there? Time for you to write your review. Go on Apple Podcasts, leave us a review.
I want to read a quick review. As a black queer femme engineer, I just want to say I love this podcast. Keep doing what you're doing. Much love from the US too. Shout out to you. I can't pronounce your handle because it's like an amalgamation of words, but shout out to you. I really appreciate that. So yeah, please keep leaving your reviews. It really does help actually, because I think we started charting a lot higher once people started leaving reviews. So hey. I'm going to read out our favorites in the week, innit? So we really appreciate you guys. If you want more pop tech-ish in your ear, we've got Extra-ish, which is our Patreon podcast, which every week we drop more content, and we've got an ad-free version of the podcast and our show notes. So if you want more tech-ish, Extra-ish is the place to be. Link in the show notes. All right. Peace, everyone. Ciao.
Bye.
Bye.